Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as I said before the break, as the political spotlight turns from the Republican race to President Obama's State of the Union address, at least to one night, for one night, we have a very interesting guest, former Democratic Congressman Tom Perriello, whose short career in the House of Representatives may have political significance for the president's reelection campaign. Perriello won in a conservative Virginia district in 2008 as part of the Democratic sweep, then lost his seat after one term in the backlash election of 2010. Last month, Tom Perriello became the new president of the Center for American Progress Action Fund, the activist arm of the progressive think tank Center for American Progress. Tom Perriello, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk some politics first, then we'll get to your agenda at American Progress. Obama carried Virginia in 2008. And it'll be a major battleground again this year. Could you talk about 2008 in your part of Virginia, Charlottesville and South, and how you won in a historically Republican district?
Sure. I think what voters want to hear about right now is who's got a plan for rebuilding the economy and rebuilding the middle class. I think that whether it's Central Virginia or Southern Virginia, you have folks who understand there's been a tremendous shift in economic insecurity over the last decade, arguably the last couple of decades, with the disappearing purchasing power of the middle class. People want to believe that we can build, make, and grow things here in America again. I think the president has really come around strongly on that message. I think that was one of the reasons that I was able to win and stay very close even in a bad year. And I think you've seen those ideas not necessarily come from D.C. out, but I think progressives would be the first to tell you you've really seen it at the state and local level, whether it's an Occupy or whether it's been Wisconsin or other places, that this core agenda of getting back to working and middle-class social mobility has now come back to Washington. I think you saw that with the Kansas speech, and looks like we're set for more of that tomorrow.
I lived in Virginia for 3 years as an adult, so I have some sense of it. But for most New Yorkers, they wouldn't have a clue, you know, the difference between Central Virginia, Southern Virginia, whatever. Demographically, what's your district like?
Well, you know, the area I used to represent included Charlottesville, a college town that I carried about 90% of, but was a small part of my district.
That's the low-hanging Democratic fruit.
I suppose. You have suburban areas. You skirt around Lynchburg, which is the center of Jerry Falwell's various institutions. You go down to the North Carolina border. You have old manufacturing towns where it was really furniture, textiles, tobacco, all of which has gotten wiped out over the last few years. And I think there's sometimes some folks up here on the right and the left that don't realize just how disruptive that globalization process has been. People that I would meet with every week who would show me 300 job applications from the last 2 years denied. People who've gone back to try to get the training to enter the workforce. George Packard, the New Yorker, has done some great writing about that part of Virginia and North Carolina. And I think what we're seeing with this new focus on insourcing, how to bring some of these jobs back, is it's not as simple as writing these people off. These are good, hardworking people who just want a fair shot to be able to make something with their for their families.
Judging from how the vote turned out on Saturday, it sounds like those folks could be Gingrich voters more than either Obama voters or Romney voters.
Well, I think you're talking about a very specific segment of conservative voters in South Carolina, a state that, frankly, is still in play for the president. And I think that what you're looking at here was a very angry electorate. I think you saw Newt Gingrich play into that. Gingrich is not quite as smart as he thinks he is, but he's smart enough to know what he was doing with a lot of coded language and a lot of emotive speaking there. But I think what you see among people that I meet across Virginia and across the country is they want you to have a plan and not just anger. And I think the president has been out there with a jobs plan. But more importantly, the progressive movement, I think, has been pushing that goes beyond parties, which is, you know, to get back from this, the sound bites attacking each side. How are we actually going to rebuild America's competitive advantage? What are those investments in innovation and education and infrastructure that are going to allow us to outcompete other countries for the jobs of the future?
Did the president carry that district in 2008?
My district?
Yes.
He did not carry my district when I won it in 08, but he was a lot closer than previous Democrats had been.
And what about your loss in 2010? Is there a lesson in that for the Democrats? It's going to be obviously much different in 2012 than it was in 2008 to try to win states like Virginia.
Well, you know, in a weird way, I look at my race and the binaries I lost, but I outperformed the national average by 14 points. So I look at it and say, what were we doing right in that race to hold so many voters? We won a majority of independent voters, even in a very bad year. And I think that's because we tried to get beyond the rhetoric of Washington and focus on concrete ideas and challenge both parties in terms of too much influence from money, in terms of too much of the partisanship. How do we get out there and focus on what actually works? And I think think tanks like Center for American Progress and economists out there, Roosevelt Institute, so many great things that are looking at concrete ideas. And I think that the reason we held so close in a bad year was that people felt like I was out there fighting hard and focusing on solutions. I think that in the last year, you know, the president has certainly been out there trying to focus on that with the jobs bill, the payroll tax cut that is once again a bipartisan idea that's turned into a political football once he supports it. But I think that's what voters want to hear is not just, you know, an angry speech and pounding like we're getting in some of the primaries, but a real plan for action. And I think first test is, will the president deliver that tomorrow night? And second, will Congress take that as a call to action? Or will they say, even in these very fragile economic times, we're going to play politics this year instead of trying to aid this nascent recovery?
But is that what people want? Do people want to hear the government is taking action? People so distrust the government that there seemed to be a backlash against the stimulus, which was aimed at creating jobs, a backlash against the health care reform, which was aimed at making, you know, health care more secure regardless of your employment situation. Why is there such a backlash if that's what people want?
I think people want to feel like any institution, including government, is fighting for them. And I think there's been such a sense that Washington wasn't working for the people, it was working for the powerful. And I think that the people have spoken up from the right and from the left and elsewhere saying, you know, this is a make-or-break moment for the middle class, as the president has said in Kansas. This is that moment where we have to take seriously that the strength of the American dream is under threat. My grandparents were Italian, come over, were in and out of poverty. My father gets that chance to go to a great public university, become a doctor, see his kids go on from there. That is so core to what we are. And I think people out there are feeling that slipping away, and they want that promise that we are going to demand basic Social Security and other things that they've fought hard and paid into, that we are going to make sure that mobility exists. And people understand that does take something like education. When you talk about government writ large, people get upset. When you talk about that community college that has taken someone from a minimum wage job and able to move them into a living wage job, that is a public institution in most cases that is providing affordable education and skills training that makes a real difference in people's lives. And I think people want that kind of fair shake out there.
Former Democratic Congressman Tom Perriello of Virginia, now the president of the Center for American Progress Action Fund, and we can get a couple of phone calls in for him if anybody wants to talk to Tom Perriello, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, as we preview the State of the Union address tomorrow night, among other things. Actually, in your 2010 reelection campaign, though you lost, you got noticed for running on the accomplishments of President Obama and the Democratic Congress, rather than running away from them, as many Democrats did. What was your basic take, and is that a major reason that you lost, in your opinion?
Well, you know, I campaigned on the idea that we need a politics of right and wrong, not right and left. And that doesn't mean that you take the halfway point between the ideas. We actually need bigger ideas. We need bolder ideas. They just shouldn't necessarily come from those traditional places. And with that, what I felt was, if I believed in the health care bill, I should vote for it and I should go out and defend it. If I believe that America should be energy independent, I should vote for it and I should go out there and defend it. And not just defend the vote in the case of energy independence, but go out and work with our dairy farmers on how to turn cow manure into power. Work with our municipalities to turn landfills into energy generators. Work with companies that were making film to put on glass to make homes more efficient. These things are not myths. These jobs are being created. The only question is whether they're going to get created in the United United States or somewhere else. And I'm for creating them here, not through protectionism, but through competitiveness. And so I think what I took away from that experience is we should fight for our principles and our values. We should explain them to people, and we should let the chips fall where they do. And when we do that, instead of constantly throwing each other under the bus, I think we move the country in a stronger direction.
So do you, as head of the Center for American Progress Action Fund, say President Obama is on the right track, rah, rah, or do you say we're an activist organization that says, Mr. President, you should be doing this, A, B, and C. We have an agenda that goes further than you.
We're a think tank and an advocacy group that's bigger, I think, that has to look beyond party and beyond election cycles and really answer the question, what is going to continue moving America in a progressive direction? And I think when you ask that question, it can't be about loyalty to a party or an individual. Where we see the president doing something well, I think we stand up and give him some credit for that. Where he's not, we push. I think Center for American Progress was on the record the last few years pushing for stronger, more aggressive focus on jobs, focus on this issue about social mobility in the middle class. You weren't hearing a lot about that from a lot of the folks in the pundit class before that. It was the deficit reduction conversation, which is also important. So I think this is actually about the ideas and the ideas that are going to make an impact at the kitchen table, keep America strong. Center for American Progress pushed on that in terms of a strategy for winding down the war in Iraq when it seemed like maybe this will be a thing. I think CAP and others pushed for that. I think the president lived up to his promise on that. Where he does that, I think it's responsible to say, hey, this guy did what he promised to do. You know, the Andrew Sullivan piece has talked about that. Prevent a depression, get us out of Iraq, focus on and kill bin Laden.
Andrew Sullivan from The Atlantic wrote a piece about how President Obama has really accomplished a lot that he's not getting credit for. That's the Andrew Sullivan piece that you refer to. How about this piece of advice for the president from an unlikely source, Chris Christie on Meet the Press yesterday?
He could finally embrace Simpson Bowles. He asked for it. He put it on a shelf for purely political reasons. He showed political cowardice by doing it and an absolute fear of confronting the big issues in our country. And I think if he came out on Tuesday and said, you know what, I was wrong to put Simpson Bowles on the shelf. I should take it off the shelf. I'm going to send it to the Congress, and I want to have a vigorous debate and discussion about really tackling debt and deficit in our country in an honest and forthright way, the way Senator Simpson and Mr. Bowles suggested. It's not that I agree with every part of Simpson Bowles, David, but it is a realistic plan that merits this consideration and discussion. He never did it. That would surprise the nation if he did it, and I think it would show great leadership if the president was willing to do it.
Governor Christie on Meet the Press with advice for the president for the State of the Union address. Simpson Bowles, the big deficit reduction commission package, it was the president's deficit reduction commission, but he never did embrace it. Of course, it had things in there that Republicans didn't like, some tax changes on the wealthy, had things in there that Democrats didn't like entitlement reform, and the president ran away from it. Would Center for American Progress Action Fund endorse Simpson Bowles?
We've been very involved in a number of efforts and conversations, including that one about how to deal with the structural deficits. You know, when I was in Congress, I pushed for an up or down vote on this. And it's a shame that when the Tea Party was at its height of power, this was the opportunity. Just force an up or down vote, because you and I know that nothing else in Congress other than that kind of fast track actually gets you there. You know, Governor Christie could probably aim that at the senators, particularly the Republican senators, who were desperate for that not to come up for a vote rather than the White House that at least put effort into this. The White House has tried this not just once but twice, the deficit reduction panel and the Simpson Bowles, both of their own initiative to try to do this. They not only met it halfway, but I would argue went 80 or 90% in the conservative direction.
So you agree that the president missed an opportunity?
No, I think he created an opportunity. He created an opportunity there with deficit reduction. Look, I haven't always agreed with the president's approach. I'm more populist. He's more centrist. But what he has done is said, what are the big problems of our time? Healthcare reform, competitiveness, Wall Street reform, energy independence, and structural deficit reform. And he's taken serious swings at every one of those. Again, not always swinging in the direction I would swing, but you can't say that the guy hasn't tried to go to Washington and tackle those big issues.
Robert in Marine Park, you're on WNYC with former Democratic Congressman Tom Perriello from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. That's a mouthful. Hello.
Thank you. Hello, Tom.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Listen, I got 2 points. I'm a moderate Democrat. I will be voting and campaigning for President Obama, first because I like the health care bill, and also I'm opposed to any kind of flat tax. I think the present tax system is the fairest. I think Dick Durbin is abandoning the president on taxes, and Charles Schumer has abandoned the president on health care. But let me just say this. I get very exasperated with people like yourself because you caught my attention when you says people are losing their purchasing power. Well, the national debt and the deficits is what's causing this. It has weakened the currency, the U.S. dollar. This is driving up the cost of oil. Everything imported is going up because of the currency, because of the national debt.
Give him a response. I'm sorry to cut you short today, Robert, but for time.
Good points out there. And again, I think that that no one is saying that the deficit issue isn't important. Again, I think the White House has tried twice with Simpson-Bowles and with the deficit summits of various forms last year. I think on the tax reform, I agree with you. I think the flat tax and the so-called fair tax would increase taxes on working and middle-class folks. In fact, Mitt Romney's proposal would increase taxes on about half of middle-class families with kids. So here we have a lot of populist rhetoric from the conservative candidates, but they're putting out tax proposals that are going to dramatically shift the tax burden from the upper end to the middle. In fact, you know, Newt Gingrich has been pushing Mitt Romney to release his tax forms, which I think is a positive thing. But what we're also going to find is how much people in that 1% that Romney's in are going to gain under Gingrich's tax reform plan. So we're looking overall at this question where the conservatives have gone from being the anti-tax party to the tax-shifting party from the high end to the middle. And I think it's important, whether you're a Democrat or a progressive, to make sure we're fighting for a fair tax system that really makes sure we protect the working and middle class.
Alex in Westchester, you're on WNYC. We have about 20 seconds for you. Alex, hi.
Tom, why doesn't the Democratic Party more strongly support regulation? I mean, BP, Massey Energy, the Wall Street crisis was all caused by lack of regulation. Why can't you get that message across?
Well, you know, some people went up in Scott Brown's race up in Massachusetts talking about his opposition to the EPA and regulations, talking about the impact on child asthma and child health. His positive numbers dropped dramatically. I think we should get the facts out there and talk about the fact that, you know, these are not vindictive moves. These are moves to protect basic health and basic fairness. This is to make sure that there are rules in the game that everyone can play by. And I think where those are our strong positions, we should stand up and make that message clear.
15 seconds. What do you think we'll hear from the president in the State of the Union tomorrow night? What do you want to hear?
Well, I really hope that we can focus back on these core issues about protecting the middle class, about American competitiveness, believing we really can build, make, and grow things here in America, that we talk about basic fairness. You know, people in my district, whether conservative or liberal, didn't care about anything other than getting a fair shake, and I think that's what we got to make sure we're putting out there.
Tom Perriello, former Democratic congressman from Virginia, is now the president of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.